You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Ever heard of copycat crimes? I mean, it's such a common term that police didn't just pull it out of their left ears. It's been around for a long time because there's something to it. When somebody went postal back in the early 80s, shot up a post office, there was a rash of people killing people in post offices. You had the Virginia Tech shooting. Within a week, there were shootings in Waynesboro, Staunton, and Augusta County in the same state. With every major crime, particularly if there's a lot of media attention, you get what are called copycat crimes, more of the same. Sometimes they last for years if the media keeps pumping them up and promoting them. In fact, as a clinical psychologist Peter Shura said, talking about Virginia Tech, he said it depends on how long the images persist in the media, and if the coverage stops in a week, the numbers begin to fall. But if it doesn't, the numbers continue. And so we know, for example, that if a child commits suicide in school, this is one of the reasons why suicides are not publicized. Suicide in a school, word travels through the school. Pretty soon, within the next few months, you're going to have more suicides in the school. Behavior is contagious. So why would anybody, a white guy, or why would Fox News be so committed to creating copycat crimes of groups of black people beating up white people? Colin Flaherty is one of those white guys who's really promoting this in the media, very upset that the media isn't covering it more. Award-winning reporter, author of White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of and How the Media Ignore It. Colin, welcome to the program.
An honor to be on with America's number one progressive talker.
Okay. So why do you want more promotion of this story that Fox News has, aggressively been ginning up over the last 6 months of this so-called knockout game of, that typically is characterized by black people knocking out, hitting, beating up a white person?
Well, Tom, what you call promotion, I call it reporting. And it's not just a knockout game. Over the weekend, my book, White Girl Bleed a Lot, is all about an epidemic of black mob violence that we document with video, witnesses, victims. In Louisville over the weekend, a couple of hundred black people at a park went on a rampage, 17 attacks on video, 6 people in the hospital. Very horrific stuff. And the message is this is happening not just Detroit, Chicago, Louisville. It's happening in a lot of small places too. So I'm not promoting. I'm not unpromoting. I'm just telling the truth. And I'm wondering why a lot of other reporters, you included, Tom, are so eager not to tell that truth.
Well, for two reasons. One, it's contagious. And as I pointed out in my setup, and two, 66, according to the FBI's crime statistics, 66.2% of all people who are beating somebody up because of their race in the United States in 2012, last year for which we have statistics, 66.2% of them were white people beating the crap out of black people. 20% were people of color who were beating up white people. 22.0%.
Those are the FBI hate crime numbers.
Just general violent crime, 58.7% of all arrests, and white people are far less likely to get arrested for things like bar altercations. The cops tend to say, okay, that's fine. But nonetheless, 58% of all arrests for violent crimes were white people. White juveniles accounted for 55.2% of all juveniles arrested for aggravated assaults. Why are you not hysterical about the crime spree that white people are committing in this country?
Because you're misstating the hate crime numbers. Totally, completely understate the amount of racial violence in this country. Example, over the
especially
weekend,
white people against black people.
Okay, you know what? If you could write that book, if you could get me the videos on that, you and I could become billionaires and write that book. But Louisville over the weekend, last week, 7 days. We've had episodes of black mob, large-scale black mob violence in Kansas City, Louisville, Dover, St. Louis. This is Cleveland. This is on, these are on video. These are reported. None of them, Tom, would show up in your numbers of hate crimes because somebody didn't sprinkle a few magical racial epithets on them. So the hate crime numbers vastly understate the amount of racial violence that is happening.
And what I don't understand, Colin, is why you are so delighted that this is happening, why you're so enthusiastic to report it, and why Fox News does this almost every day, certainly every week, to promote this idea. You promote an idea, and it gets out there, more of it happens. This is why we don't report suicides, for example. Why it very often it's why serial killers, once they're caught, the media just stops covering them, because you always have copycats of serial killers. Why is it that you want to promote this kind of behavior of black people hurting white people? What racial animus is driving you, or fear?
It's funny. The first I heard that, the copycat theory was on Tom Selleck Blue Bloods 10 days ago. So I congratulate you on the original reporting. But
well, this is common sense. Copycat is a phrase police officers have used for a century.
Yeah. I'm just the guy sitting on the corner looking at all this unreported racial violence and wondering why people like you are on one hand denying it's happening.
I'm not denying it's happening. I'm saying you're causing it. You're promoting it.
Explaining why it's happening.
I'm trying to figure out why you're promoting this.
I'm not promoting anything.
Why do you look for examples of this so that you can throw them out into the media to cause more of it?
Why are you denying it?
I haven't denied it. I'm asking why you are so enthusiastic about it.
Well, it's called being a reporter, and it's called getting the story. You ought to try it sometime. It would improve your show.
You're only reporting on black people going against white people. How about reporting on white people going against black people?
Okay, give me some. Tell you what, why don't we just go down the list? Because it is my contention that the black on white is wildly out of proportion. And I've got more than a thousand examples of this. That is
in a country of over 300 million people. So.
And it's wildly out of proportion. And so you give me some examples of white on black, and I'll come back black on white. We'll see who runs that first. Go.
See, I wouldn't be so irresponsible to go out and say, oh, here's another case of white on black. Here's another case of white on black. Oh, look at it. They call it a game. Hey, you can play this game. It's the knockout game. Why don't you try? Oh, look at this. I would not be so irresponsible as to promote that, because I know that there are white kids, white punks, white gangs out there who would say, oh, what? Oh, look at that on Fox News. That looks like fun. Let's go out and kick the crap out of a black guy. I would not do that.
Has that happened?
I don't, to the best of my knowledge, no reporters are that irresponsible except you and Fox News. And I'm wondering why.
Because what you just said is a complete liberal fantasy. There are not packs of white people running around beating up black people, but the opposite is absolutely true.
You've never heard of skinheads. You've never heard of white nationalists. You've never heard of the Aryan Nation. You've never visited the website stormfront.org.
I heard about it on TV in fantasy, but in reality, the numbers are so wildly out of proportion, Tom, I'm surprised you could sit here and pretend.
You've never heard of Emmett Till.
In 1954, I know exactly who Emmett Till is.
Yeah. So your argument is that you need to promote this awareness of what you refer to as black on white crime, not because you're promoting is going to cause more of it, but because what?
A psychiatrist tell us, Tom, we are only as sick as our secrets. Our biggest secret in this country right now is the level of racial violence and how newspaper reporters and liberal talk show hosts across America are denying it, excusing it, and condoning it.
What about the daily racial violence that's visited on black people by 50% unemployment rates among youth in black communities, 28% unemployment rates among overall people in black communities? What about the daily violence that's... Oh, we're out of time. I'm sorry. Colin, I thought I had another minute. I think you've said your piece, right?
All good.
Okay, good. Colin Flaherty, what's the website?
WhiteGirlBleedALot.com.
Okay, or Colin Flaherty.com as well, right?
Right.
C-O-L-I-N. Colin?
Colin.
Colin. Okay, thanks. Colin, good talking with you. We'll be
back.
Thank
you, big man.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm still scratching my head here. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Nate Sweet, producer of The Big Picture and international media superstar, on the line with us. Hey, Nate.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. Famous, notorious liberal, I should add. So today, oral arguments.
One of the top 100 people that's killing America, hopefully.
Pardon?
Hopefully I'm on that list.
The top 100 people who's killing America?
Yeah. It's a good goal to be on that list.
Where did that list come from?
Some conservative talk show host. I forget his name.
Oh, am I on the list?
I think you said you were.
Huh. I'll have to check that out.
You should take it as a badge of honor.
I get these things all the time. It's hard to keep track of them. Oh, Bernie Goldberg's book. We had Bernie on the show, of course. In any case, today in the Supreme Court, heard the argument. Now that they, since the late 19th century, they've been increasingly saying corporations have rights of persons under the 14th Amendment. And they haven't yet gotten to marriage or sexual relations or divorce or circumcision. But they have today decided to hear arguments about whether or not corporations can have a religion and then inflict it upon their employees.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface level, this case is about Obamacare's birth control mandate. Obviously, a lot of the Obamacare politics that have been surrounding our politics since 2010 are affecting this case.
It's entirely about that, because the Beckett Foundation that brought this thing, that solicited these guys, is funded by the Koch brothers, who are trying to take down Obamacare.
Yeah, so there's an intersection of a bunch of different things. You have the Obamacare politics. Obviously, that's what's the most immediately obvious to people paying attention to this case. And then there's also the issue of corporate personhood.
Not to the Washington Post paying attention to it. They have a nice long piece where they talk about all the players, not a word about who's behind Beckett, which is what initiated all this. Anyway, yeah. Back to you.
And one of our guests who's actually coming on tonight to talk about this case actually used to be a fellow with the Beckett Fund. We'll get their takes on this, so that should be interesting. We'll also have Bridget Todd, she's a Democratic strategist, on. We'll talk about some of the legal issues. You know, what's interesting is that if you listen to the pro-Green family, the pro-Hobby Lobby camp, they say that this 1993 law, this religious freedom law, protects, people who are – and protects the people against state action to violate their religious beliefs as long as there's no compelling interest. But what's interesting is they never really get to the issue of whether or not that law, which defines corporate – protects people, actually affects corporations, because they're not people. So –
right.
But that's sort of one of the many legal issues we'll be getting into today.
Okay. And then we're going to go to our big politics picture, big picture politics panel.
Yep. We got Huey Newsom, Cole Stangler, and David Hogberger on the program. We'll be talking about a couple things. We'll be talking about Obama's proposal to end the NSA's bulk metadata collection program. James Reason, the former New York Times reporter,
Reason.
His comments. What was that?
Reason.
His comments about the Obama administration being a threat to freedom of the press. We'll also be talking about whether or not countries should have the right to sue polluters in the International Hague, in the International Court of Justice over there. And we'll be talking about sort of the rise in publicly funded anti-science education programs through school voucher programs. And we'll be talking about the Senate Intel Committee moving forward to release the report on the CIA's torture program.
That's great. Hey, Nate, what do you get when you cross a joke with a rhetorical question?
I don't know.
Come on, that's not the answer.
No.
Nate Sweet, producer with The Big Picture. It was a rhetorical question.
All right.
Thank you, Nate. I'll see you tonight.
All right, thanks, Tom.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. In the next hour, we're going to be asking the question, is Rick Scott guilty of murder? Actually, I'm going to be making the assertion, at least killing. But if murder involves malice aforethought, I think that you could argue murder. Maybe not first degree, maybe second degree, but murder. Rick Scott, governor of Florida. We have a name of his victim. She is dead. We'll get into that in the second hour. And in our third hour, Stephen Cohen, professor emeritus at the New York University and Princeton University, contributing editor to The Nation, is going to drop by. We're going to talk about what's going on with Ukraine and the IMF bailout. Michael Hudson made a really interesting comment that I read over at Nouriel Roubini's blog, the famous economist who predicted the crash of 2008. It's Econ Monitor is the name of the blog. And we got to fix this printer so it prints out the URLs of the websites that these stories come from. Anyhow, the title of the blog is Who in Ukraine Will Benefit from an IMF Bailout? And Hudson makes this very provocative comment. The objective of IMF loans is to deindustrialize the country. The Westerners want to buy the Ukrainian farmland. They want to buy the public utilities. They want to buy the roads. They want to buy the ports. And all of this is going to be sold at a very low price to the Westerners. And the price that the Westerners pay will be turned over to the Ukrainian government, which will then turn it back to Ukraine. So whatever the West gives Ukraine, actually not won't turn it back to Ukraine. They'll turn it back to the IMF. So whatever the West gives Ukraine will immediately be taken back. And this is how IMF bailouts work. So that's interesting. We're going to get into that in our third hour. This case in the before the Supreme Court this morning, we're going to get into in the next hour. Shano is going to join us, and he was there in the Supreme Court building this morning. He'll fill us in on that. Doug in Hamul, California, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Tom. How are you today? You having a good day?
I am well. You share my previous guest's fear of black-on-white crime, quote-unquote. How come the press never talks about white-on-white crime?
Yes, they do. You just don't report on it.
I've never heard that phrase, white-on-white crime. Have you?
Yes. This happens all the time.
Who said it?
If you're going to be objective, you have to – that the numbers dictate that blacks are committing more crimes, like in Chicago and elsewhere, like here in San Diego area, okay, than whites, okay?
Well, not necessarily. If you go to Appalachia, you've got white people committing more crimes than black people. If you go to Vermont, you've got – I'm going to sneeze. Excuse me. You've got – oh, I didn't hit the – I'm sorry. That went on the air. If you go to Vermont, you got white people committing more. You know, New Hampshire, you got people, white people committing – you know, it's a matter of who's there, A, and who's poor, B. And so, shocked and surprised, Doug, that in neighborhoods where you've got a large percentage of African Americans and – the result of, 500 years of racial violence and discrimination and ongoing bigotry and barriers to entry to the society at large, the power structures of the society and of the business place, that there's more that there might be a higher percentage of crime than in similar white communities. Does that surprise you?
Well, that's pretty good. But, I'm not shocked at the urban black entertainment culture. It focuses on violence and gangs. And out of wed births.
Why would Fox News and Colin Flaherty, why would they want to publicize this so-called knockout game, this thing that it seemed to me was invented over at Fox News, or at least was first from the first time I ever heard about it was watching Fox News, and then they started promoting it a lot. And the more they promote it, of course, the more it's going to happen, just like you get a school shooting and all of a sudden you've got over a period of years epidemics of school shootings. You get a post office shooting back in the 70s and throughout the late 70s, early 80s, you had post office shootings. You get, you name it, right? And you get a suicide, you're going to get an epidemic of suicides. Everybody knows that copycat behavior happens. Why would Fox News and Colin Flaherty be so irresponsible, and you for that matter, as to want to promote this?
It's not a responsibility to promote the facts, Mr. Hartman, is it?
Yes.
No, it's not.
I think to characterize something that originally started in one neighborhood, perhaps with one group of people, and maybe didn't even have a name, the so-called knockout game, maybe it did, maybe it didn't, to characterize that and promote that in a way that takes it national, I think that's highly irresponsible.
Okay, let's take for instance that there's a pack of wild dogs roaming your area.
Are you comparing black people to wild dogs?
I'm comparing a pack of journal reporting on it. Okay, you're reporting on a pack of dogs roaming your area and killing, say, sheep and other livestock because they're in a pack, right? Now, if you reported on that.
Wild dogs don't watch reporting. Wild dogs don't have the cognitive abilities of human beings. They don't watch reporting and say, gee, I think our dog pack here in Washington, D.C. should do what that dog pack in Los Angeles did. Doesn't happen that way, Doug. Humans, though, do that. Copycat behavior is real common in human societies. And nobody has answered my question, and apparently you can't either. Why is it that Fox News apparently wants more of this happening? I would submit to you my hypothesis, which may well fall into the category of paranoid liberal conspiracy theory. I'll cop to that right up front, that the more of this there is, the more they can report on it, the more it's going to frighten white people and Fox News and other right-wing sites, conservative politics in general. They get their mojo, they get their money, they get their donations, they get their viewers from scaring people. They want people to be afraid. And say what? Oh, yeah. And so, you know, that's what I think is going on. And you know, it's just, you got an alternative explanation, Doug?
Well, did you mention Vermont, right?
Yeah.
Vermont is mostly white, right?
My point.
You mentioned on your show before that in Vermont you can just walk in and buy a gun. So why is the murder rates so much higher, like 10, 15 times higher in black urban?
Because poverty is 20, 30, 40 times higher, number one. And number two, well, you can compare those rates to Chicago, but compare poor black areas to poor white areas is not that much different stuff.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And this is my point. Conservative media, and particularly like white guys, try to racialize stuff that really has to do with poverty and institutionalized racism rather than race. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. So we're asking the question, why would Fox News and a small group of mostly hard right ideologues be promoting this meme of the so-called knockout game where groups of black, mostly kids, beat up somebody until they're unconscious? And in some cases, videotape it and brag about it. Why would they do that? Why would they promote that? Could it be? Here's a couple of suggestions Shane came up with. Number one, it makes it much more palatable to say to their white viewers, because Fox News's viewership is largely white, to say to their white viewers, therefore, when Scott Walker in Wisconsin, or pretty much any other governor in any other state, look at McCrory in North Carolina, which has a large black population, or Rick Scott down in Florida with a large black population, when they try to knock black people off the voting rolls, that's a good thing. After all, those people are violent. Number one. Number two, oh, yeah, let's cut back funding to the schools. Number three, oh, yeah, let's cut the welfare stuff. Number four, welfare for corporations, sure. That's rich white guys. You know, they're not into it. Yeah, I mean, it's just the list goes on and on. This kind of story sets up all kinds of, you know, Paul Ryan must be right. We got to stop giving money to these, you know, these lazy black guys, essentially what Paul Ryan said, this culture of never working in the inner city. So it basically justifies Reaganomics and more of it. So there's a tremendous benefit to Republicans in this, because it makes their base more afraid of black people, and they look at the Democratic Party. You'll notice on Fox News, more often than not, when they're representing somebody who is a Democrat, it's a black person. They're trying to associate, and when it's a Republican, it's a white person. They're trying to associate in their white viewers' minds that the Democratic Party is the party that represents African Americans. After all, look at who's in the White House. And therefore, since it's those black people who are so violent, you got to get out there and vote, you Republicans. Vote in the primaries. Vote in 2014. Vote in the midterms. We got to stop these people. Look out. They're taking over the country. Right? And there's no corresponding thing on the other side. The Democrats are not running around going, look out, the white people are coming. Even though white people commit most crimes. White people commit most murders. White people commit most violent crimes. You just don't hear. I mean, you know, it's frankly not a message that would resonate well with Democrats anyway, because Democrats typically are not fear-driven voters. They don't go to the polls to try and stop somebody from doing something. They're not afraid of gay people. They're not afraid of black people. They're not afraid of women. They're not trying to legislate, you know, the how a woman uses her uterus. They're not trying to legislate how gay people behave in or anybody for that matter in the privacy of their own homes. Now you got a Republican trying to pass a law that says that if you're divorcing your wife, you can't have sex with her in the marital home. Even if you're trying to make up. I mean, it's downright bizarre. What was that comedian's name who started the Daily Show? Liz Winstead. Liz Winstead was on my TV show a couple weeks ago, and she said Republicans want to shrink government down to the size where it fits in a woman's vagina, and or uterus, one or the other. And it's like, yeah, I mean, really? Anyway. But the racial part of the politics is the most pernicious. We played Lee Atwater last week talking about this. And you know, he was quite explicit. Lee Atwater, 1981, he was interviewed after he ran Reagan's 1980 campaign and before he ran the 88 Dukakis campaign, or Bush against Dukakis campaign. And he said, we used to say N-word, N-word, N-word. And then that became unacceptable. So we said things like force busing, force busing, force busing. And then people figured out what that was all about, and that started to hurt us. And so now we say, cut taxes. And people get it. What we're really talking about is cutting funding to poor people in black communities. In fact, here's Lee Atwater, in his own words, with the N-word bleeped out. But you know where it is and what it is.
Here's how I would approach that issue as a statistician. You start out in 1954 by saying by 1968, you can't say that hurts your backfire, so you say stuff like force busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you get it so abstract now, you're talking about cutting taxes, and all of these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and the byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. And subconsciously, maybe that is part of it. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that if it is getting that abstract and that coded, that we're doing away with the racial problem one way or the other. You follow me? Because obviously sitting around saying we want to cut taxes, we want to cut this, and we want is much more abstract than even the busing thing. And a hell of a lot more abstract than, you know. So any way you look at it, race is coming on the back burner.
So, you know, Republicans win. You know, they can call out to the racists. And in the modern era, instead of talking about force busing and states' rights, when they want to call out to the racists, they use the Paul Ryan language. Kelly in Cullom, Illinois. Hey, Kelly, what's up? You're a social worker?
Yes, I'm a social worker. I work mental health in a maximum security male facility. And I also study criminal behavior. I've done some research on crime representation in the media. The uniform crime statistics show that this myth of black on white crime is just that, a myth. And typically it is black on black crime, white on white crime. However, it looks like black on white crime is worse because an individual of color who commits a crime against a white person is more likely to go to prison for that crime.
Right. And the white person is more likely to report it, by the way, than a black person who's the victim of a white person.
You know, in the states with a death penalty, a person of color who commits the crime against a white person is more likely to get a death penalty than a white person who commits that same crime.
Eight times more likely nationwide. Yes.
Exactly. And I think that Fox News benefits from promoting these stories of the knockout game because they want people to be afraid of the wrong thing, you know, these street crimes, as opposed to the white collar crimes, which are predominantly committed by white, conservative, wealthy, top 1% people. And those crimes are so much more costly to this nation and so much more devastating.
Exactly.
To us as individuals.
Oh, you so nailed it, Kelly. It's like if you can get people afraid of the black guy down the street instead of afraid of Jamie Dimon who wants to take your house, then you've accomplished a major thing. And that's what Fox is all about. That's brilliant. Kelly, you absolutely nailed it. In fact, I'm do you have any of my books?
I have almost all of your books. So,
well,
yeah.
Do you have a copy? I'd like to give you one. Do you have a copy of Crash of 2016, the new one?
Yep. I just bought it and read it last week.
Okay. Let's see. What else do we have here? Unequal Protection, the Tom Hartman Reader, Screwed. Any of those?
I do not own Screwed right now.
Great. We're going to send you a copy. You are our caller of the day, even though you're our first caller or our second caller. Kelly, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks for listening to WCPT. Danielle, she's on line three. And so anyhow, we'll continue with this. James in Essex, New York. Hey, James, what's up? James, you had another example of copycat crimes you wanted to share with us? Oh, James, you're listening to your TV, not your phone. You got to listen to the phone. Rama in Williamstown, Vermont. Hey, Rama, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, real quick here. You know, you guys are really hitting the nail on the head here. The dog whistle for the racism bit being easy to find. As soon as somebody starts associating a large number of negative things with a person's skin color, you know you've got racism in action. There's no better giveaway than that. And your guest at the beginning of the hour, he was talking about unruly mobs of black people, not unruly mobs of people from inner city.
Right.
And so, you know, it totally divorces it from any sort of situation, any sort of personal responsibility, divorces it from any sign of individuality. Associate it with the color of the skin and then lump on as many negative things as you can with the color of the skin. That's racism. And I don't care how you want to couch it. You can come up with statistics till you're blue in the face. It's racism.
Yeah, the last time I saw an unruly mob, it was a bunch of Tea Partiers spitting on John Lewis. I mean, it's excellent point, Rama. Thanks for the call. Malcolm in Park Forest, Illinois. You got a minute to the break, Malcolm. Quick point you wanted to make?
Okay. I'd like to talk about racist groups. I subscribe to the intelligence report from the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yes, sir.
I have a map in this issue, 2014, about the number of hate groups of all kinds, even black hate groups. But I'd just like to say that the black hate groups usually are not as violent, you know, as the hate groups. Black people are killing each other. These young black knuckleheads in the hood, they're killing each other. They're not killing a lot of white people, you know.
Right.
But the main thing that people don't talk about is you have some of these hate groups that are actually funneling guns into the black community to these gangbangers.
Wow.
And also dealing drugs into the black community.
Of course.
That's a new model that they have for killing black people. They do it by remote control, by dealing drugs and weapons into the black community. And these are hate groups doing this.
Wow. Yeah. This reminds me of the story of the Reagan administration bringing, you know, weapons into Guatemala, shipping weapons down to Guatemala, shipping cocaine back into Texas, into that airstrip in Texas, and then selling that in the inner cities, converting it to crack and selling it in the inner cities. Amazing. Malcolm, thank you for sharing that. We got to check out the Southern Poverty Law Center. It's been a while since we've had one of their folks on. We need to do that. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Malcolm always has some of the most insightful comments on this program. Thank you, Malcolm, for listening to CPT, for watching, for calling the show. We'll be right back, 15 minutes before the hour. And welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. And David in Victorville, California, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, David, what's up?
Tom, I think we are hitting, I mean, you're right on point with the political agenda. But I think where we kind of drop the ball at is, I'm sure you're not, is to assume that you don't have scholars on the other side who understand the primitive nature of tribalism.
Sure.
And, you know, we are not so far away as a species from all of this primitive tribalistic behavior.
Yes, chimp tribes will kill each other when they encounter each other.
Yes, and so what they are doing consciously, as you know, and, you know, you can logically or intelligently try to get over statistics to them, but when you're dealing with somebody who's functioning out of fear or from that primitive tribal mentality, you cannot rationalize with them. You cannot use statistics and things of that nature to get over to them. So I think on our side, we need to stand back and say, well, okay, your truth is right. You have some violent, crazy black people out there engaged in some very unseemly and savage behavior. But now, after we accept that, right, we don't have to defend that. Like the brother said, or was just on before me, the knucklehead little blacks who are out here, actually, if you look at some statistics, it is them killing each other.
Right.
And we don't have to make excuses or apologize for that, because I think that also falls in the realm of savage, tribal, crip blood, you know, behavior.
Sure.
And so to acknowledge it what the guy was saying at the beginning of the program. Okay, yeah, this is occurring. But I'm understanding, too, this copycat phenomenon. But see, they're doing on Fox what is based upon, as you laid out, you know, eloquently, their agenda. And it does have reverberating and benefit to them. It accrues benefit for them.
Yep.
And it does do like what you just said. It distracts from the reality. And the reality is that those who have the power and the money have always operated in their own best interest, and that means to divide and conquer. If you can keep the Hatfield and McCoys, you know, in this constant feuding and tribal, crazy, fear-based activity, then they can go on and they can do what they're doing, and this is how they are successful.
Right. Yeah, and frankly, I mean, that's how the coal barons kept the Hatfields and McCoys fighting each other. As long as they both kept working in the mines, they put them in different mines. But hey, you know, poor West Virginia folk, and you know, in this case, it's the banksters who are making off with all our money, and all the hustlers and all the hustles that go on in poor communities, both black and white, across the United States, who are victims of white collar crime. And that's you know, I'm forgetting her name, but Kelly, I think. Who called up and pointed that out. And you're validating it. David, very well said. Thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Victorville, California. We will be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Jim in St. Paul, listening on KTNF. Hey, Jim.
Hey, I'm a recovering academic, and I haven't been on campus for a while. Yesterday, I went on campus with my wife, saw at the Republican booth there some posters talking about something called campus carry and how everybody should vote for it.
Right.
Nice pictures of nice-looking white collegiates with pistols in holsters in the center of their backs.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what in the world could that be all about? And your conversation about the black fear and so on rang a bell. I think it's also number five to finish your list or to fill your list out. Number five is we can sell lots of guns.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And let's pass laws to make it easier. And not only that, we can use those laws, the passage of those laws, to get people to sign petitions so we can get them on our mailing list, so we can extract money from them, and we can encourage them to go to the polls on voting day. And so, you know, all of this becomes part of the Republican outreach campaign. All of it is the old, this is Lee Atwater, still, you know, speaking back from the grave, continuing his work. Brilliant, Jim. Thank you for that analysis and that story. It's brilliant. Rodney in Chicago Heights. Hey, Rodney.
Hey, Tom. Kelly kind of stole my thunder, but she nailed it. And it's just, a smoke screen to take everybody's eyes off of what's actually going on, especially the ones that lack the intellectual capacity to analyze, you know, events and things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and they're also the ones that feel that they have to go everywhere armed.
Right. Let's not point out that Duke Energy is polluting your water and giving you cancer, that the Koch brothers are polluting your air and giving you cancer, that Jamie Dimon and his buddies on Wall Street are robbing you blind. Let's not talk about any of that.
Right.
Let's talk about, oh, my God, it's black people.
Yeah. And years ago, I was appraising real estate, trying to start a different career, and I was the low man in the office. So I went to the south side and west side of Chicago with all black neighborhoods, some of the roughest neighborhoods in the city, by myself, unarmed. I just went and conducted my business and didn't act afraid, and I never had a problem. But these other people, like the ones we're talking about, you know, even if they were armed to the teeth, they'd be peeing their pants.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of hysteria there. I walk through a lot of black neighborhoods here in Washington, D.C., you know, several times a week. And people are very nice to you. I mean, you know, people say hi to you in some of these neighborhoods in ways that they don't in white neighborhoods. It's amazing. Rodney, it's not amazing. I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, people are people everywhere you go. Thanks a lot for the call, Rodney. And nice story. Steve in Frankfort, Kentucky. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Huge fan, longtime listener, first time caller.
Thank you.
I've been listening to this show, and what I can't get over is if Fox News is guilty of perpetuating this type of crime by repeating it on their station, why are you any different by talking about it on yours?
Because I think that by pointing out the agenda behind it, you neutralize it.
Okay. I mean, I'm a regular Fox News and CNN watcher, and I've never heard, I've heard this reported multiple times, and they have never discussed the race of the individuals committing this or the race of the people who are being harmed.
But they show the videos of it, and it's fairly obvious.
Is it to you?
Apparently, well, it is to me. The videos that I've seen on Fox have been black people beating up white people, and Colin Flaherty in his two pieces, I mean, his one is titled Roving Black Mobs, Too Many to Ignore. The other is 10-day bloodbath for knockout game, quote, non-existent knockout game. And he says 5 months after the New York Times said this spontaneous racial violence was an urban myth, 4 months after NPR admitted that it was happening once in a while, that race had nothing to do with it, 3 months after CNN said maybe it was happening after all, blah-de-blah-de-blah, victims and videos and witnesses keep popping up. He says the media still refuse to connect the dots. The perpetrators are black. The victims are not. And then he goes on to give several examples. If you're not seeing the racial part of it on Fox News, you are certainly hearing the dog whistle part of it, Steve. And I next time you see it, keep this conversation in mind. Mike in Chicago, listening on CPT.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. Question.
Good. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know it's going to be obvious given the conversation topic of the day, but I'm assuming you or I, you know, we see a black teenager walking down the street. We don't really see them as a threat. Now, you have people like George Zimmerman. They see a black teenager walking down the street and they figure they have to, you know, walk up to him, pick a fight and then stand their ground. And, you know, what we're talking about today, I wonder where they get that idea from.
Yeah, from watching these kind of reports on Fox News, of course. Excellent point, Mike. Thank you. Larry in Jamaica, New York. Hey, Larry.
Hey, how are you, Tom?
Good.
Tom, discriminatory lending ran rampant in South Jamaica, Queens, and I called and you said I could call back, and I took the opportunity to do so. And I just wanted to point out, I was pressed for time last time. I had all of about a minute. That there was a $43 trillion lawsuit by the Spire Law Group. I believe it was filed in October of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it was against the U.S. government, the current administration, all the major banks and the bank services. And my thought process was this. There were over 35,000 homes here in South Jamaica, Queens, that were underwater. And the settlements that the government put a group by the name of, what was the name of the group? It was a group that was responsible for...
Doesn't matter, Larry. What's the point?
Rust Communication. It's how little the settlements were. They were next to nothing. I mean, they're taking
right.
people's homes away as we speak.
I know, and they're giving them $5,000 to $10,000 after they steal their entire house.
$5,000 to $10,000, that would be astronomical for the rates in here. Most of these people got less than $1,000. I
wow.
got two settlements myself, Tom.
Wow.
One was for $500 and change, and another one was for a great big whopping $47.50.
That's incredible. And the banksters are walking off with $10, $30, $50 million bonuses.
Exactly.
Yeah. Larry, you know, we need to do a whole lot more about this, and I need to talk about it more on the radio. Thank you for the call. Thanks for the heads up. 35,000 homes underwater just in Jamaica. I mean, this is a crime was committed against the American people. Nobody's doing anything about it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And, you know, I got it. Sometimes you just have to say it, right? You just say it. Florida Governor Rick Scott is now officially a killer. A killer. You could call him even a murderer. And Charlene Dill is one of his victims. Charlene Dill was a hardworking Florida woman who moved down to Florida when she was just 18 years old to help make ends meet. She worked at various fast food restaurants at Disney World. She cleaned houses. She babysat. As the years went by, she found herself as a single mother struggling to raise three children. Last year, Charlene made just $11,000 cleaning houses and babysitting. She used that money to help put food on the table for her children and to put a roof over their heads. Then Charlene discovered she had a severe heart problem that needed to be managed. And she couldn't afford to get it treated right because she didn't have health insurance. Turns out Charlene fell into what's called the red state donut hole created by Republican lawmakers like Rick Scott. It says that if you make over $5,400 a year and less than $11,400 a year, you get no health insurance. Below the $5,400 a year, Charlene would have qualified for Florida's pretty pathetic Medicaid program. Over $11,400 a year, she would have qualified for free health insurance under Obamacare because of the subsidies for low-income people. But because she earned over only $11,000, she made $400 too little to qualify for Obamacare, but about $5,000 too much to qualify for Florida Medicaid. This isn't, of course, how the Obamacare law was written. But this giant Swiss cheese hole was drilled into Obamacare by John Roberts when the Supreme Court said that states could refuse to take federal money to pay to cover people who didn't earn enough to qualify for insurance subsidies but make more than state Medicaid programs will cover. And it was into that hole, that red state Republican donut hole, that Charlene fell. 23 states, which are either controlled by a Republican governor or a Republican legislature, have refused to expand Medicaid coverage to their citizens under Obamacare. This is pure politics. It's an effort to sabotage Obamacare by cutting the working poor out of the program. Republicans are hoping that working poor people like Charlene will be so upset that they can't get Obamacare and won't realize that it was the Republican governors who refused their eligibility, that those poor working people will be so angry with Obama and the Democrats that they'll vote Republican in 2014 and 2016. This is all about politics. These states and these Republican politicians are literally playing politics with people's lives, and Charlene is one of the people they've now killed. Dead. John Roberts, you have blood on your hands. Rick Scott, you have blood on your hands. Around 5 million Americans won't have access to health care in this year because they fall into the red state donut hole, just like Charlene. Since she didn't have insurance, Charlene couldn't afford a regular doctor or regular treatment. In 2012, she went to an emergency room because of a flare-up with her heart. Doctors told her there to start taking medicine and to be routinely monitored, but she couldn't afford it because she only made $11,000 a year and had to feed three kids. And Rick Scott would not let her have the free health insurance that working poor people in every democratically controlled state in America already have. Rick Scott, the guy who was the head of the company that it was found guilty of the largest Medicare fraud in the history of America at the time, Governor Rick Scott, Republican governor of Florida, Rick Scott, was willing to let Charlene Dill die so that he could score political points against President Obama. Back in December, Charlene went back to the emergency room, this time because of abscesses in her legs. Shortly after that trip to the ER, she picked up another job as a vacuum cleaner saleswoman on top of babysitting and on top of house cleaning to help provide for her family and to pay for her ER bills, which were stacking up and weren't covered because Rick Scott and the Florida Republicans refused to let the federal government pay for her Medicare. This last Friday, 5 days ago, Charlene was supposed to go see one of her close friends so their children could play together. She never made it to her friend's house. She died during one of her vacuum cleaner sales appointments that day. This hardworking, loving, single mother of three young children was just 32 years old. Charlene died because multimillionaire Republican and Florida Governor Rick Scott chose to play politics rather than protect the lives of the Florida citizens he is supposed to be serving. Rick Scott, you are guilty of murder. You should be prosecuted. You should see the inside of one of the death cells in your state that you are sending people to every day for crimes far less egregious than this. But unfortunately, if Republicans across the country continue playing politics of people's lives, Charlene is not going to be the only one to die. A recent study by researchers at Harvard University and the University of New York found that as many as 17,000 Americans will be murdered by Republicans as the direct result of Republican states refusing to expand Medicaid under Obamacare. We should call these Republicans what they are, killers. Samuel Dickman, one of the authors of the study, told Morning Call, quote, "The results were sobering. Political decisions have consequences, some of them lethal." Republicans like Rick Scott don't give a rat's ass that their political decisions have life and death consequences. Consequences like three young children losing their mother. You think Rick Scott's going to go to the funeral? You think Rick Scott is going to pay for raising these three young kids? Give me a break. Rick Scott is a sociopath who doesn't give a damn. He just wants to smear Obama. He doesn't care who dies, just so long as it's working poor people and not one of his rich buddies. But enough is enough. Some things are more important than politics, and life is certainly one of them. Republicans say they're pro-life, but that's a bald-faced lie because they refuse to let low-wage working Americans have access to life-saving Medicaid. If Rick Scott and his Republican buddies in the Florida legislature are really the Christians they claim they are, read Matthew 25. If these guys really are the Christians they claim they are, they're going to burn in hell, and deservedly so. And to those of you watching the program in Florida, you might want to call the governor's office and ask how Rick Scott feels about having killed Charlene Dill. Now, to give Rick Scott some small measure of credit, he actually originally suggested that his state expand Medicaid. And then the Republican legislature said, no, we won't do it. And then he said, okay, cool, no, we won't do it. And that's his official position now. So you might also want to call your Republican state senator and state representative and ask how they feel about having blood on their hands. Charlene Dill's blood. What are they going to say to her three young children who are now without a mother? Come on, Republicans. Feel free to call into the program. You Republican cowards. You Republican cowards, state senators and state representatives down there in Florida, and not just Florida, almost 30 other states. You Republican cowards, I dare any of you to call this program and tell me why, any rational reason why Charlene Dill had to die. You cowards are going to burn in hell if you actually believe that there is such a place. It will be waiting for you. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, it's real easy to talk about states' rights and, Paul Ryan. People have to have the work ethic. They need to come on. Cowards! And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Paul, watching Free Speech TV in Lucerne, California. Hey, Paul, you wanted to get back to this issue of the so-called black-on-white violence.
Yes, I would.
Okay, go
it's
for
kind
it.
It's a joke that he'd even think that. Here's a perfect example for you. Clevis Carter, he's a young black male in Arkansas, goes to college with two other white males. They all three get pulled over. Clevis Carter had a gram of weed on him. The other guy had a pipe, and another guy had an eighth of weed on him. Clevis Carter was the only one arrested. Okay? Clevis Carter never made it to jail because he was shot in the back of the head in the cop car. And the Arkansas police said he did it himself. He shot himself in the back of the head while he was handcuffed behind his head.
I remember that case.
Which is impossible.
Yeah. I remember that case. And to this day, no police officer has been charged with that crime.
No. You can go to Arkansas and you can be arrested by that murdering cop right now.
Yep. Yep.
Okay? And if you want to talk about these governors, they're serial killers. Look at Rick Scott in Texas. Look at some of the,
Rick
some
Perry
of the people
in Texas.
That he put to death. Rick
yeah.
Perry, I'm sorry, that he put to death in Texas. An innocent man killed his family, supposedly. The proof was he didn't kill his family. There was an investigation. Rick Perry sabotaged the investigation, totally fired everybody in it, and killed the man anyway.
Yeah. Gleefully.
These guys are not just...
It's like, remember Carla Faye Tucker?
Yes.
She was, I think, the first woman who had been put to death in the Florida gas or the Florida death chamber, however they kill people in Florida. At least the first one that George W. Bush put to death. And he was interviewed by Tucker Carlson on television. And Tucker Carlson later told the story of how creeped out he was by this interview. Because in the interview, Tucker Carlson asked, who's a conservative and a Republican, asked George W. Bush, who was then governor of Texas, asked him how he felt about putting Carla Faye Tucker to death, and George W. Bush imitated her begging for life. He started wringing his hands and said, she said, "Governor, save me, save me!" And I didn't save her. Ha, 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 ha! And he starts laughing. And Tucker Carlson is thinking to himself, this guy is a friggin' sociopath, or words to that effect. I mean, I'm not sure that he said that, but he said that he was totally, totally creeped out by it. I agree with you. I think that these Republicans who are, you know, profess all this love for life as long as it's inside a woman's uterus, but they don't give a damn about life once it's on the outside. These Republicans are sociopaths. They are in it for themselves. They don't think of the humanity of other people, and many of them are killers.
Yes, they are.
So what do we do about it? I think we have to show up at the polls, Paul. We need to get organized. We need to wake people up to the fact that this is going on.
Educate people against this stuff.
Say what?
We have to educate people.
Yeah.
We have to shine light on this stuff so they'll see what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I am totally with you. I am totally with you. This is such a horrible, horrible, horrible crime that Rick Scott committed against the people of Florida and against Charlene Dill. And it is being done by Republican governors all across the United States and Republican legislatures. Paul, thank you for the call. 20 minutes past, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Shane Farner was at the Supreme Court this morning. He's going to tell us all about that, and we'll pick up your calls for the rest of the hour. Oh, and 10 minutes before the top of the hour, of course, we're going to have somebody from the Talk Radio News, Bob Ney. Oh, cool. Bob Ney, former congressman, former Republican congressman, going to drop by. It's your media support group for We the People, taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. And Shane Farnan is with us. He is our,
I'm always with you, actually.
Yeah, he's our associate producer and runs our audio board and is also a law school grad and the Supreme Court reporter for the Talk Radio News Service. So you were not just with us this morning. You were also doing your part-time job there over at Talk Radio News down at the Supreme Court building. So what happened?
Well, it was pretty much what I expected it to be. And what a lot of court watchers expected. Of course, it was the Hobby Lobby case where a couple of corporations have come in and said the Affordable Care Act violates our religious freedoms in that we don't want to provide certain types of contraceptives. And this is, of course, corporate personhood. Again, instead of free speech, we're talking about freedom of religion. Does a corporation have the right to exercise religion and deny its employees certain types of contraception under the Affordable Care Act? And it was your typical ideological split, yet again, 4-4 on each side with Justice Kennedy in the middle. And it's from watching this morning, I cannot tell which way he's going to go.
So on the right, you had Alito and Roberts and Scalia
and Justice Thomas. Thomas doesn't speak.
Right, but you always know that however Scalia votes, Thomas is going
to
vote.
Or even further to the right than Scalia usually, even.
And so
the first half of the arguments were generally the three female justices going after the attorney, Paul Clement.
The plaintiff.
For the corporations. It was Sotomayor and Kagan mostly, a little bit of Justice Ginsburg. Interesting questions. You know, Sotomayor came right out and said, how does a corporation practice religion? How do they practice their religion?
How did he answer that?
He didn't. There were so many questions that were asked that, you know, they just kind of duck, dodge, and then move on to a different point. That was one that he just did not answer.
Huh.
Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor mostly concentrated on, you know, what about blood transfusions? You know, what about vaccinations? Right. Where does this stop? And then they went even further, saying, well, what if a corporation believes in child labor or doesn't believe in the minimum wage? Where does this stop? You know, the parade of horribles. The one limiting thing that could occur, and this kind of came out of nowhere, and I don't know if anyone's really talked about it much, but at one point, the Chief Justice John Roberts said about these parades of horribles that, you know, there isn't really a problem here because we can just limit this to closely held corporations and S corporations, that this right of a corporation to practice religion isn't going to be a problem with publicly traded corporations because we could just deal with these small corporations. We'll carve out an exception
for
them.
Well, you know, the IRS has already taken that position.
Are they?
You know, yeah, and here's how it works. I own the company that owns this show.
Right.
It's just Louise and I.
Right.
And we're the only stockholders. And so if we were to claim dividends and try to say, I only want to pay 15% income tax on it, the IRS would not let us do that. Because we're a small, tightly held corporation, whereas Jamie Dimon can do that all day long with Bank of America or whatever he's in charge of, Chase. Well, I forget which one he runs.
Right.
Secondly, there are limitations of liabilities that big corporations have. If ExxonMobil creates billions of dollars worth of damage, they can always just bankrupt their company, and the stockholders can walk away from it. If our small corporation were to run up huge debts,
you're personally liable
to an
extent.
Legally, in, you know, de jure, no.
Mm-hmm.
De facto, yes.
Right.
They can always pierce the corporate veil to go after tightly protected small companies. It's very hard to pierce the corporate veil in large companies. So he makes a point.
Well, but if you're going to take the Alito line, which is, you know, he is clearly, his religion, not to use a pun here, is corporate personhood. If you're going to say a corporation is a person, using their logic, since it's made up of people, then why is a closely held corporation a person and not a publicly traded corporation not a person?
How do you divide that? Because there's less of a consensus with a publicly traded corporation.
You can have three people who hold a closely held corporation. They have three completely different religions.
Right.
That was what the Solicitor General, Don Verley, was saying. You could have, how do you decide? You know, the question is, if a corporation has a religion, who decides what that religion is? Is it 51% of the shareholders? Is it the CEO?
Right.
That's
the problem with corporate speech, and this is what in the Stevens dissent was pointed out in Citizens United, is who is the corporation speaking on behalf of? It can't be the shareholders, because the shareholders are so diffuse that, you know, there's very rarely a consensus on the part of the shareholders that, hey, let's run a political ad.
Right.
It can't be the employees, even though they're the largest percentage of people drawing paychecks in the corporation, because they're not consulted. And, you know, so and it's probably not the board of directors. It's typically the CEO. And is that reasonable? I mean, should not the CEO simply use his own money or her own money?
Right.
But so, in any case.
So it's going to come down to it. It's one of those, you know, 5-4 rulings again. Justice Kennedy did ask the question, what about the religious liberties and freedoms of employees? When you say, I will not cover these four types of contraceptives, are you not infringing on those individual employees' religious freedoms?
What was the answer?
There wasn't one again.
Really?
It was a lot of these questions. When you watch the Supreme Court, it's more that it really isn't question answer. It's argument, counter argument, or argument, or you don't really mean that. The question really is, and then you answer your own question.
Oh, so they
Justice Breyer, once in a while, will ask again and again and again. But really, the justices seem to be arguing with one another more often than not.
Huh.
And I will say, this is just my personal opinion. I think Solicitor General Verrilli, he spent a lot of time arguing with Justice Alito, but realized it was a lost cause, so he didn't put a whole lot of his heart into it, but he did spend a lot of time with Justice Kennedy.
Right. Because Kennedy's the swing vote.
He is. He is at this point. Certainly on this case.
Right.
Certainly on this one. It appears that way. And I cannot tell which way he's going to go.
Yeah.
I can see him signing on to the Roberts. We're just going to, you know, closely held and S corporations. We'll give them religious.
Do you think that the Catholicism of the five right wingers, I mean, Sotomayor is also Catholic, but she's, you know, not made that political.
It came through in some of the arguments where General Verrilli said, we're only talking about contraception, not abortion. And I'll say the Roberts and Scalia jumped in and said, well, Catholics or these people believe that contraception is abortion.
Right. Or these forms. They actually only object to Plan B and the IUD, which prevent implantation. Fascinating. Shane Farnham. Thank you, Shane.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Okay, we'll be back with your calls and thoughts on, you know, what's going on with the knockout game and all this kind of nonsense over Fox News and whether Rick Scott should go to prison. The good, the bad, and the very, very lactivorously ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. The good, Jimmy Carter. During a recent interview with HuffPost Live, the former president spoke out against the Obama administration's drone policy. Check it out.
In my opinion, the use of drones to strike a potential terrorist quite often results in the death of innocent people. As I mentioned in the book, the statistics from government and so forth. And I believe it creates more additional terrorists with a fervor of killing Americans than we would be if we were not using the drones to kill people.
I couldn't agree more. Drone strikes have declined over the past year, but that's not good enough. It's time to end the drone wars, as well as the so-called war on terror as a whole, once and for all. The bad, Tracy Burns. During a Monday segment on the Texas oil spill that has closed down the Houston Ship Channel, the Fox Business reporter said that oil spills are just distractions. Check it out.
You and Sandra said it last hour. Just do the Keystone Pipeline already. Create all these jobs. Enough of the nonsense. These are all distractions. That's all they are. This is much like anybody who wants to lose 5 pounds has a box of Oreos in front of them. Just get rid of the Oreos and you'll be fine. Same thing. Do the pipeline.
Right, Tracy. Why don't you tell that to all the local businessmen who've suffered as a result of the Texas City oil spill? I'm sure they'll agree that their losses are just distractions. And the very, very ugly Caprock Academy. The Colorado school is under fire today for banning a 9-year-old girl from school grounds because it said that the girl's shaved head violated school dress code. Cameron Renfro cut her hair because she wanted to show support for her friend Delaney, who is undergoing chemotherapy to treat neuroblastoma, a type of brain cancer. School officials will hold a special meeting tonight to decide whether they should reverse Cameron's punishment. But the fact that they even have to have a meeting to discuss it is just very, very ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly. So, anyway, my rants for the day. I see our Twitter, Danielle was showing me. I've got to get it up on this computer here so I can see it. Our Twitter account was going nuts. The chat room is, you know, gung-ho. When are we going to start holding Republicans accountable for the deaths that they're causing? I mean, it's just a simple question. Republicans have, you know, arguably, since ever since 1947, when Harry Truman proposed a national single-payer health care system in the United States, and the Republican Congress blocked it, prevented it from coming even to the floor for a vote, arguably since 1947, Republicans have been responsible for somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 40,000 deaths a year. Somebody has to call them out. These people are killers. They're sociopaths and killers. So anyhow, Ted in Chicago. Hey, Ted, what's up?
Yes, sir. Love listening to you.
Thank you.
I run an intern program. I just wanted to relate this in a short, maybe 30 seconds. I do a 30 days to the new you. I spent 18 years in the General Assembly. I've been gone for 22 years. Time to get everybody off the couch and working again. I listen to Stephanie, yourself, and Norman Goldman, and I run the intern program asking them all to listen to those three shows.
Oh, you've mentioned this before on this program.
It's the truth, and there is no required listening when you're going to school.
Yeah.
And I just want to say you're doing a dynamite job. There is no sense of urgency. We've really got to build for November so we can knock these people off the ballot.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're all going to be dying of our own sword.
Yeah, Nate Silver is saying that the Republicans are going to take the U.S. Senate. I mean, that happens. You get the House.
Never.
You know.
I understand.
Never underestimate the power of Koch brothers money and you know, voter apathy and you know, yes, negative indeed. Campaigns. One of the big things about negative campaigning isn't so much that it causes people to vote against the candidate and for the opposition. You know, when the Republicans run slash and burn ads against Democrats, it's not because they want people to vote Republican. It's because they want people to say, ah, to hell with it. They're all crooks, and not show up and vote at all. Negative ads suppress voter turnout. It's
exactly.
This is the Paul Weyrich strategy. Paul Weyrich back in 1980 said, you know, we don't want people to vote. I don't want people to vote. And elections are not won by the majority of people. They never have been in this nation's history. As a matter of fact, our leverage, quite frankly, in the elections goes up as the voting populace goes down. Well, they drive it down with negative ads, and that's what it's all about. Ted, thanks for the call. Thanks for your internships and your kind words. Dane in Silverthorne, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Dane, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good. I just wanted to talk. It seems like, you know, we all recognize that there's inherent problems within our system right now and that we basically suffer from corporatism. I mean, there's so much corporate money in politics these days, you can't trust anybody. So why, instead of, like, sensationalizing the knockout game and calling everybody out like that and blaming people, why don't we, like, work together and, like, strive towards community and actually helping each other and the sense of humanity? We're losing this in America, to say. And it's, like, this seems sad. And it's put off by the sensationalizing of violent crimes
yeah.
to desensitize people to a new sense of a new source of, like, a normalcy.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. That's why I had one of the lead guys on who's out there promoting more publicity for the knockout games in the media on to ask him, why are you doing this? Don't you know about the copycat effect? You have, you know, one postal shooting, all of a sudden you got a bunch of postal shootings. You have one school shooting, now you got a bunch of school shootings. You have one mall shooting, you get a bunch of mall shootings. You have one suicide, you get a bunch of suicides. I mean, there's this thing called the copycat effect. It happens even with serial killers. And it's a phrase that I didn't invent it. Police departments invented it. And why is Fox promoting it? Well, they're promoting it because the more they can make white people afraid of black people, the more those white people will tolerate things like voter suppression and racist laws and racist economic policies and redlining and everything else. And Dane, thank you for the call. Dave in Chicago. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, I just want to say that my heart goes out to Miss Dell and her family, and I really appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, in fact, there actually is a fundraiser for her funeral, and I went over there this morning and made a small donation. There's I don't know if it's still up on Democratic Underground or not. I hope it is. But the story is Charlene Dill was murdered by Rick Scott over at democraticunderground.com. And the if you want to help the family, it's gofundme.com/17BF60. So, but there's a link over at that website. And, you know, I went in and made a small donation this morning, and I would encourage everybody else to. These poor kids. I mean, and this should not be how America works, by having people who have, a little bit of money making contributions. It should be that we are all taking care of ourselves. These kids, this is so tragic. Dave, thank you for the call, and thanks for your. Oh, you want to mention death panels?
Yeah, I think that the Republicans had threatened that there would be death panels in this, after
Obamacare.
The installation of Obamacare, and it looks like there are death panels.
Yeah, and they're
three Republican states.
Yes, absolutely. This is it's called the Red State Donut Hole. It is a death panel, and the whole Republican strategy is working people who make more than $4,000 a year and less than $11,000 a year are not eligible for Obamacare subsidies on the high end, and they're not eligible for free Medicare on the low end. They have to pay the full amount, and they can't afford it. In many cases, it's $10,000, $15,000 a year for the insurance, and they're only earning $10,000 a year. They can't get it in the red states. They are screwed, and the Republican calculus on this is that these people are going to figure out they're screwed. They're not going to figure out that it's the Republicans who did it to them. They're going to think it's the way Obamacare was written. They're not, they're not well informed enough to know that this is not how Obamacare was written. This was the hole drilled into Obamacare by John Roberts on the Supreme Court. And, when the Republicans took this to the Supreme Court, and they're going to blame Obama for it. It's going to be part of the Koch brothers, lie campaign on television. And, it's going to get more Republicans elected. I think it's terrible. Thank you for the call. Bernard in Manchester, Massachusetts. Hey, Bernard, what's up?
Well, I'm a normal listener to yours, and I think occasionally you have a few good things to say.
But?
But today you pissed me off.
Okay.
I'm a Republican. I'm also an inventor. And I invented the fetal monitor. And I invented the instant imaging CAT scanner.
Good on you.
Which has saved the lives of millions of people.
Yes.
So when you just blithely get on the telephone, on the video, and by the way, I built the first digital video in 1948. Mm-hmm. I think you're going off the wall.
When I say that Republicans like Rick Scott are killers?
You speak, that you're not speaking about all Republicans.
Oh, no, I'm not, Bernard. I'm very much not. My father died a Republican, and he would not condone this kind of behavior.
Okay. Well, let me
say for the record, there are a lot of good Republicans out there, Bernard. I know some.
Is there anything good about the United States you ever believe in?
Of course.
It would be nice if you expressed it once in a while.
I think I do frequently. Bernard,
I have that impression.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry you're left with that. With that negative impression. I think there's a lot good about this country. And those kind of change the subject ad hominems are not the way you win an argument. I would suggest if you are concerned that some of your Republican brothers and sisters are killing people, and I'm calling them out for it, you might encourage them to stop killing people.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Give Rick Scott a call and say, hey, give these people Medicaid. It's free. It's not going to cost you a penny. Let them save their own lives. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Bernard invented the fetal monitor. He was born in 1928. Wow. If it's the same guy. If it is, I salute you, sir. Good on you for a life of invention. Now, please take back your political party. We need good Republicans. We need Republicans who have integrity, who have a heart, who care about other people, and we need them to get into the Republican Party and get sociopaths like Rick Scott out of the Republican Party. This is why Charlie Crist was on this program just a few weeks ago. Charlie Crist quit the Republican Party because of sociopaths like Rick Scott, and he's running now against Rick Scott to replace him. He became a Democrat. It's tragic that he had to become a Democrat because he was raised a Republican. He was always very comfortable in the Republican Party. My dad's Republican Party, Dwight Eisenhower's Republican Party, Richard Nixon's Republican Party would not recognize Rick Scott. They would not, they could not, if you were to say to them, we're going to take a guy who owned a company that swindled Medicare out of hundreds of millions of dollars and put it in his own pocket, took a $70 million golden parachute out of this thing, His company pled guilty. His company was of crimes, not just civil, crimes. We're going to take this criminal and let him use his own money to pay for his own campaign to run for governor of Florida, and he wins. And then what is the first thing he does when he wins? He passes laws in the state that require mandatory drug testing for poor people, drug testing performed by his company, his healthcare company. My father, the Republican, would never have gone for that. And Bernard, I'm guessing you wouldn't either if you looked at the details and the facts. Please, take back your party. We need good Republicans. Paul, in Woodinville, Washington, listening on KBCS. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wrote the letter to the Galatians, also to the Romans. Yes,
different Bernard. Paul, come on.
Oh.
I believe that Bernard actually did invent the fetal heart monitor. We looked it up, and it sounds like it's somebody probably of his age. So
no kidding. I wanted to tell you about a letter I got from Congressman Mike Rogers about Obamacare. Mike Rogers is of Michigan. Mm. I was back there visiting my mother during the holidays, and we were watching the Sunday shows, and he said something about Obamacare, and it supported the Scott Walker plan to have not just a big government mandate for Obamacare, but to have everybody on health savings accounts. So I told my mom, I said, let me show you how to call Congress, Mom. So the next day I called up, and I said, so what about this? And they said, well, we can get back to you, and blah, 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 blah. What's your contact? So I gave my mother's address back in Livingston County, Michigan. And lo and behold, here it is, what, 3 months later, almost 4 months later, I got a two-page letter from them. And this was not a form letter. This was a letter that was somebody typed out and expressed some ideas. Now, what was in here was a typical, I just thought, he must think that his constituency is stupid. Probably for the most part, he's right. They elected him. But I said there was a lot of misinformation, the typical stuff that we, you know, we've all talked about over the months and years. But, I'm out of time here.
Yeah. You got 20 seconds.
The stuff that was in there was selling insurance across state lines, health savings account, and deregulating medical practice.
Oh, geez.
By yes.
Oh, geez. Paul, yeah, I mean, this is all they've got. Now, this is all they got. They're not going to, I don't see how they're going to do anything with it. Paul, thanks for the call. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, your media support group for We the People of the United States. And speaking of Republicans, which we've been doing for the last hour, former Republican member of the U.S. House of Representatives in the great state of Ohio, Bob Ney, now a reporter with the Talk Radio News Service and the author of the brilliant and highly acclaimed, and I'm not exaggerating, I mean that dead serious, totally seriously, book Sideswiped. If you want to know how this city works and you want to read a fascinating story of redemption, really, in many ways, Sideswiped by Bob Ney is just a brilliant, brilliant book. Bob, Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good to be on.
Thank you for joining us. And I should say, your Talk Radio News report today is brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Somebody called me a few minutes ago and asked me if anything about America I liked. I think really what he was saying is, you know, are there any Republicans you can tolerate? There are quite a few, actually. You know, there are some people of goodwill in the Republican Party, aren't there?
There's a couple out there.
Okay.
I mean, look, Clinton and Gingrich look pretty good as far as getting along when you compare Boehner. So
yeah, actually, but that's the thing. You got to go back in history. I mean, I said, you know, my dad, who was a Republican, a Nixon Republican, I don't think even Richard Nixon would recognize the party today. But
I think there's some Republicans really disgusted, and there's some good ones in D.C. that are trying to reach their hand out, and I think they're getting their hands chopped off for it. And
yes.
Some of them have quit on that basis. Congressman LaTourette of Ohio quit. Couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, Steve LaTourette, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we've had him on the program. He was a good man.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, what's going on in the world, Bob?
Well, this is a fascinating day because you have Jimmy Carter, and I'm going to side with Jimmy Carter if you
He's going to be on this program on April 1st.
So. Oh, he made a wonderful call to me on the Help America Vote Act. He's just, I thought he was a very thoughtful person. But
you're talking about back when you were in Congress?
Yes, he called me. He led to the whole bill to, you know, try to stop people from being turned away at the polls, which it did. He helped create the Help America Vote Act for us.
Wow.
Yes, he did.
That's remarkable.
But Jimmy Carter, this is fascinating, came out and said that, you know, he believes they're reading his emails.
The NSA.
And he said that. And General Keith Alexander, and this was a, you know, he responded in an exclusive interview, and he's the outgoing director, of course, of the National Security Agency, and he said, we are not monitoring the emails. So he can go back to writing emails. The reality is that we don't do that, quote, and if we did, it would be illegal and we'd be held accountable and responsible. And if you look back at what James Clapper, the head of DNI, or National Intelligence, said to the United States Congress, which is, you know, we don't just, as a bulk whole, mine emails and phone calls, and we now know that's not true.
Right. It's sort of like, you know, if you believe what Clapper and Alexander have to say, I got a bridge to sell you in New Jersey.
I have to go with Jimmy Carter on this, and
yeah.
You know, he's a former president. He still has information and access, you know, at his fingertips. And
yeah, he says if he's going to write a letter to a foreign leader, he writes a handwritten letter and mails it in the post office.
That's right.
Yeah. He also came out today and said that the drone strikes are creating more terrorists than they're killing.
I saw that too.
Yeah.
And you know, he's been
a very thoughtful guy.
Yes, since he's went out as president, he's been involved in a lot of different things on a humanitarian basis, and also
yes.
for the election systems of America, et cetera. You know, so
and around the world,
he's an international guy.
Yeah, I think he's a good guy.
And the president came out today and said, "Look, we're not going to bulk acquire these emails, and we're going to set up a new court, and the FISA court will continue till then."
Do you think this is the result of the meeting that he had in the White House 2-3 days ago with all the Silicon Valley CEOs who are really upset that they're losing all this business to other countries because everybody assumes the NSA is reading everything?
I have two theories on this one. One is that. The second is the fact, you know, Rand Paul had ginned this whole thing up at the CPAC conference about national security. He dug into it. The young people that we call them the millennials, or my friend, your friend Ellen Ratner calls them the millennials, under 30, became very energized for the first time in a long time with the first Obama election.
Right.
So they became, you know, politically aware, more active. And those are the young people that are kind of really glued to Facebook and electronic, you know, cell phones,
right.
et cetera. And they're the ones who I think are more worried about their privacy than some older people who say, well, you've got to get the terrorists.
Yeah.
I think a factor of the Silicon Valley, the fact that the telephone companies are screaming to high heaven about being forced to keep certain data, and the fact of these young people who are starting to bubble up, not maybe they're not going to vote for Rand Paul, but they are responding, you know, to a lot of this issue that
right.
the drum beats on. And I think, Tom, that's a second maybe sub part of this.
I think you're right. And by the way, for the record, let me say, if we elected Ronald Reagan, it would not surprise me if we elected Rand Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we'll have this conversation in 2 years, but a Rand Paul presidency or a Rand Paul candidacy on the Republican ticket, I do not think is out of the question.
I think he has an option. The Republicans, you know, with Chris Christie going out of the picture,
yeah.
have headed towards Rand Paul, and Rand Paul has a much better chance than Ted Cruz.
Or Marco Rubio. Yeah.
Or Marco Rubio.
Yeah, I'm with you. So what else is going on in the world?
Well, the other thing is, of course, the huge, huge debate that started today in the U.S. Supreme Court with Hobby Lobby,
mm-hmm.
and it's the sole-owned business, and then the Conestoga Mennonite-owned business in Pennsylvania, now who had lost it to the appellate court, but they put the two of these cases together, and today started, and outside you've got your normal bantering back and forth, you know, of cases, but
right.
this is the controversial provision, you know, the one that's been talked about, the mandate requiring employers to cover contraception. So this debate started today, of course, in the Supreme Court, and the justices appear to be divided.
Yeah.
Now, if one looks at, you know, Justice Roberts, who went with the Obama administration, you know, on his vote,
on Obama,
he may have justified it a different way.
Right.
One wonders where he'll come down on this.
Well, that's interesting. It's interesting that you think that his vote is in question. My concern is the Beckett Foundation that funded this thing is largely funded by the Koch brothers.
Oh, of course.
So it's
Absolutely.
Like another attempt by the Koch brothers to take down Obamacare. Surprise, surprise.
Right.
Billionaires don't want working Americans to have health insurance. Holy cow, what a surprise. Bob Nay with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goatsfieldgoat.com, and his book, Sideswiped. Check it out. Bob, thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Great talking with you, Congressman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Crimea, Ukraine, Russia. This whole thing is very much in the news right now. And I wanted to get Dr. Stephen Cohen back, professor emeritus at New York University and Princeton University, contributing editor to The Nation magazine, author of the book Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives, From Stalinism to the New Cold War. And his most recent cover article for The Nation, Distorting Russia, How the American Media Misrepresent Putin, Sochi, and Ukraine. Get him back on and get his thoughts on what's going on. Professor Cohen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much for being with us. First of all, you want to give us a quick recap of, from your point of view, of what has happened over the weeks since the end of the Olympics?
I don't know we need to go all the way back to the Olympics. I mean, it seems like last century, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
At that time, we were just trying to cast a kind of bad aura on Putin's Olympics.
Yeah.
But if we go back to the time when you and I talked about
last, which was probably 10 days to 2 weeks ago,
things have gotten worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. Let me summarize what I'm thinking and have been saying.
Okay.
Lately, that we are two steps from a Cuban Missile Crisis confrontation, and after that, one step to possible war. The two steps to a Cuban Missile Crisis type of confrontation would be that if NATO, and this is being discussed in Brussels and Washington, moves its troops to the Polish West Ukrainian border. Remember, Poland's a member of NATO. Or even into Western Poland. Both are being discussed. And there's a lot of troop movements going on in that area, but we don't know exactly what they are. If that were to happen, Russia, President Putin, would almost certainly send his troops into southeastern and eastern Ukraine. So that would be the Cuban Missile Crisis eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation.
Right.
Now, is that likely to happen? At the moment, it's less likely to happen than not. But in this kind of run-up to whatever comes next, behavior and words on all sides are now escalating in a really reckless way. And you've got inside Ukraine many tails wagging this dog of war, all sorts of provocations, snipers, spontaneous secessionist street demonstrations, reckless statements by the government in Kiev, which they then take back. Everybody is threatening everybody, and today President Obama made a kind of contradictory statement in Europe. He said, we're not going to use military force to return Crimea from Russia, Russia annexed it last week, back to Ukraine. But we're worried that Russia is going to move further militarily. Therefore, we're mobilizing our forces in Europe. So that's the NATO trigger that I'm talking about.
Right.
What I do not hear coming from Washington is any sense of diplomatic initiative. Meanwhile, however, the Russians have offered on March 17th, since we talked last, Tom, a very interesting kind of talking points for the beginning of negotiations. So to end and complete this summary, it may be that somewhere that you and I don't know about, wise people representing all the parties are sitting down and having a serious discussion. But the public discourse, particularly now coming out of Europe and Washington, shows no interest in this Russian proposal for specific talking points to begin negotiations.
Wow. And what would those talking points be?
I wish I had written them down because I read them in Russian from the Russian Foreign Ministry website. Mm-hmm. But let me kind of generalize.
Yeah.
Russia is calling for the creation of what it calls a contact group. That is a kind of super diplomatic group of the United States, the European Union, and Russia. And that it would strive for the following. New elections in Ukraine for both the president and the parliament. Secondly, a moderate or non-aligned Ukrainian government in Kiev that would not ever, because this is Putin's red line, join NATO. That's the big issue. Thirdly, this is somewhat more technical for political scientists, but important politically, a new Ukrainian constitution that would create a federation. At the moment, Ukraine is a unitary state. For example, the governors of the Ukrainian regions are appointed by the president. They're not elected, as our governors are, by the regions or the states. Russia wants this because a large part of Ukraine is pro-Russian, ethnically Russian, Russian-speaking. They tend to be concentrated in the southeast and the east. And Russia's proposing that for them and for the pro-European regions in the west, there'd be a federation which would give these areas more autonomy. Now, there's a danger there. One has to negotiate that, how much autonomy.
Right.
That's the general proposal, and that this would be, if agreed, and I think this is very important, ratified by the United Nations Security Council. In other words, Russia's willing to take this to the United Nations. Now, just briefly, because I'm sure anybody is going to ask, as presumably Obama and Kerry did, if they paid any attention, what is Putin willing to give in return? And here I think the following. That first of all, he would recognize this new government of Ukraine.
Which he does not know.
He does not. He considers the new government to have come to power through a mob, street-driven coup d'etat against the elected president. That's his view. And in some ways, it's certainly understandable in legal terms. So that he would give recognition, and recognition would include Russian guarantee of Ukraine's political and territorial sovereignty, which means, to dot the I, that Russia would not inspire or provoke or take advantage of all this pro-Western secessionist sentiment that is in Ukraine even after Crimea was taken away. There's still a lot of secessionist sentiment in the east. And other things that I think, I mean, too technical, but it is, to my way of thinking, it's enough to sit down and talk. And if they meet each other halfway, we get out of this worst crisis in 50 or 60 years. So I think the ball is now, I don't like this analogy, but it is now in Washington's court. It's in the White House. It's in Obama's hands now.
Right. And he's got all these forces to deal with, from John McCain and Lindsey Graham screaming at him on the one hand.
That's really an important point, but it's a twofold point. Were Obama to arouse himself to leadership that, frankly, he hasn't shown in international affairs previously, but to historic leadership, and say, you know, there's two sides to every story, and there's a point. Maybe we cross red lines in Ukraine. Maybe this really is something of a grave concern to Russia from its national security point of view. And we're going to try to find a compromise. If he were to do that, all manner of wrath would descend upon his head, not only from our hawkish Democrats and Republicans, but in this general toxic atmosphere of anti-Putin, Russophobic, almost hatred that's emerged in Washington. Now, though, and this is very important, our media calls Putin an autocrat. Now, an autocrat means a despot with all power. That is, the autocrat makes all decisions. That is not Putin's situation. He has survived 14 years in power because he's mini and micromanaged conflicting groups in the Russian political elite, financial, political, ideological groups. And take my word for this, there is a group or more that is much more hardline toward the West than Putin. Putin doesn't hate the West. Putin's not anti-American. These people are, and they are now speaking up loudly.
So he's more like Franklin Roosevelt trying to walk down the middle, where Roosevelt had fascists on one hand and communists on the other, literally in the 1930s. Maybe that's an imperfect analogy.
I got to think about that. But all I want to say is that we assume in this country that there is no politics in Putin's political elite.
Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hold that thought, please, Professor Cohen. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Professor Steve Cohen. We're talking with Professor Stephen Cohen, Professor Emeritus at NYU and Princeton, author, contributing editor to The Nation, thenation.com, Nation magazine, author in The Nation of Distorting Russia, and also author of the book, Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives. Professor Cohen, you were saying.
The emeritus in my title means I'm old. It's a polite way of saying an old guy.
Okay.
But I have been around this subject as a scholar, and as somebody who's lived in Russia many years, this question of how authoritarian Russian politics works. And since Stalin, there has never been a leader of Russia who's had despotic power. The leader has always had to take into account groups to the leader, so to speak, soft and hard side. Now, in this case, when you look back over Putin's 14 years in power, as the Russian political elite does, it sees something we don't see. It sees Russia, Putin, making one concession after another to the West and getting, as Putin said, betrayed. In his speech, when he formally, on I think March 18th, when he formally announced the annexation of Crimea, referring to the United States, he said they have lied to us so many times, meaning we, our government, has broken its word. So now, as conceivably, these two leaders, Putin and Obama, decide we've got to negotiate our way out of this danger of war. If they do it, Obama is going to have to be bold, resolute, strong, decisive. So is Putin, because some people who have called him an appeaser of the West in the past are going to say, you can't believe a word or a commitment that the United States makes. We hold all the cards now, and they do, and now is the time for a reckoning. We will reckon with these people once and for all.
So Putin has his own John McCain's and Lindsey Graham's to his right, and they may be even more powerful than the ones that Obama has here in the United States. Is that the essence of what you're saying?
I would go farther. I would say they're a lot smarter. They know more, and they have more influence at the high level than do McCain and Graham. McCain and Graham say preposterous things that bear no relationship to reality in Russia, and they do symbolically idiotic things. What in the world McCain was doing in November and December on that square in Kiev, embracing a political leader whom the European Union had denounced as anti-Semitic and racist? Why did McCain just not know who he was? In which case, he ought to resign from the Senate because he doesn't know what he's doing. If he knew, there's no word for it. We don't embrace neo-fascists, even if we hate the other side, Russia, as McCain obviously does. No, these people in the Russian political establishment are serious people. Ideologically, they're dangerous, but they know what they're talking about. They know how to make arguments, and they have tremendous influence.
Yeah. Where do the, in 20 seconds here, where do the oligarchs come down in this?
There are a lot of oligarchs, and I mean, after all, if we freeze their assets, it means the New Jersey Nets are up for sale because it's owned by the Russian oligarch. Okay. But basically, they are controlled by Putin because he controls their assets and their cash flows, even if they're deposited in Europe.
So it's kind of the opposite of the United States, where the Koch brothers and other oligarchs here control our political system. In Russia, the political system controls the oligarchs.
I would say that the oligarchs do play an enormous role controlling the Russian political system, but not essential foreign policy.
I see. Okay. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. Professor Stephen Cohen with us. We'll be right back. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Professor Stephen Cohen, Professor Emeritus at NYU and Princeton University, contributing editor to The Nation, thenation.com, author in The Nation of Distorting Russia, and author of the book Soviet Fates and Lost Alternatives, from Stalinism to the New Cold War. And Professor Cohen, I wanted to get your thoughts on the IMF. The IMF is offering this loan package, or apparently is preparing to offer a loan package to Ukraine. Dr. Michael Hudson, who is an economist with the University of Missouri, said, and I quote, the objective of IMF loans is to deindustrialize economies. The Westerners want to buy the Ukrainian farmland. They want to buy the Ukrainian public utilities. They want to buy the roads. They want to buy the ports. And all of this is going to be sold at a very low price to the Westerners, and the price that the Westerners pay will be turned over to the Ukrainian government, which will then turn it back to the IMF to repay the loans. So whatever the West gives Ukraine will immediately be taken back. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't have enough knowledge, and Dr. Hudson might be right. To me, it sounds like it contains an element of truth, but is overstated. What we do know for sure, and this happened in Russia and in other countries, that when a loan from the IMF is accepted, it comes with conditions, and they're called austerity conditions. And the first people hurt are the people who receive federal salaries and pensions, largely older people. It also means that subsidized businesses, whether they're subsidized by rent by the government or energy supplies, shut down. So unemployment ensues. Western influence, whether it's wise or unwise, whether it's benign or rapacious, grows tremendously because it now holds the debt, billions of dollars, of this country. Generally speaking, I think IMF involvement in these kinds of situations has been bad for those countries. But what's interesting here is you'll notice the figure they're banding about, $15 billion. That's because Putin in November offered Ukraine $15 billion to keep it from the financial precipice.
And has that been delivered?
Well, he delivered the first part, which I think was $3 billion. Mm. But in addition, he offered something potentially more valuable, a one-third discount on natural gas. Ukraine lives on Russian natural gas. One-third would mean billions and billions of dollars savings to Ukraine a year. As soon as this crisis began, when the Russian, Ukrainian President Yanukovych was overthrown on February 2nd, Russia closed down those loans, pulled back that offer. But I neglected to say, when we were speaking earlier about what Putin might do in a negotiated settlement, if he got it a significant part of what he wanted, I think he might make a contribution to Ukraine's economic recovery. It would be in Russia's interest to do so for various reasons. The easiest thing for him to do would not to be giving them cash or loans, but simply to revert to his offer of a one-third discount on natural gas. And that would be easy to do. And I think the Russians would do that if we meet them halfway. But again, I see no movement in that direction in Washington or in Brussels.
And now, how does this $10 billion deal that Yanukovych negotiated with Chevron to frack natural gas out of Ukraine? I've read stories suggesting that Ukraine could become gas independent if this is successful. It's a year or two down the road, but they'd end up being like North Dakota, you know, the new Texas and Oklahoma of the late 19th century kind of thing.
I know. Everybody thinks that fracking and shale gas is the road to prosperity. But first of all, it leaves out the technological consequences of fracking isn't very well known yet.
Right.
We'll see what comes. Secondly, it's very expensive. Ukraine can't do it on its own. ExxonMobil also has even more invested in Russia.
Hmm.
So what if Russia says to ExxonMobil, make your choice? The billions in hand with us are the billions in the bush if you find anything, and it leaves out the political factor. Ukrainians do care about the environment. Once Ukrainian society is mobilized, as it is now,
it could turn its ire toward any manner of issue, including fracking.
Right.
So I don't think Ukraine can count on that right now. But this returns us, Tom, to your point, good point, about the role that what we loosely call oligarchs play in this. Bear in mind what Obama's professed strategy is, though I don't think it's even a policy. That's to bring sanctions against Russia. The only people who could effectively sanction Russia in the United States are the corporations that have gigantic investments in Russia. The Ford Motor Company, PepsiCo, ExxonMobil, and many more. They're doing very large business in Russia, and they projected even larger business. They haven't been racing to sign on to sanctions against Russia because it would shut them down in Russia. So, you know, capitalism pays a dividend in politics sometimes.
Hmm. Interesting. We have just a couple of minutes, maybe a minute and a half left. I'm curious your thoughts. We talked last time we had one of these long conversations about the possibility that Ukraine might actually come apart, that we could see a civil war there, a separation of East and West. Your thoughts on that in the last minute we had?
That's right, Tom. We are spitting distance from that. Here's one of the mysteries, and if you could find anybody, an English speaker who's there and might report to you, I don't know what's going on in Western Ukraine. That's the part of Ukraine that wants to join Europe. But it's also the part of Ukraine where there are many, many movements of these quasi neo-Nazi parties and organizations.
That's interesting. The Talk Radio News Service that we have a collaboration with and we share a floor with here in D.C. has two reporters in Ukraine, but they've both been on the East, and they've called into this program several times.
Ask them to go west.
Okay, I'll do that.
My wife, the editor of The Nation, is hoping to have somebody to go there and report, but our major news media in this country, for one reason or another, never file any reports from there. They're in Donetsk and in the Russian provinces.
Right.
Maybe that's too dangerous, but bad things are happening there. But to make it more generally, obviously, here's the point. Ukraine was one time before this began, one state. It's never been one country historically. It's always been at least two. One leaning toward Europe, one toward Russia. Maybe partition to Ukraine. So right. God knows how and where you draw the map.
There you go. We'll have to leave it at that. Hang on.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Professor Stephen Cohen, New York University and Princeton University, The Nation Magazine, thenation.com. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. Good talk. Talk media for the sane among us. I thought that was one of the more sane conversations we've had in the... I'm always not just impressed, but boggled by the depth of Professor Cohen's intellect and the breadth of his knowledge on the topics that he is... I don't know about other topics. I'm guessing it's similar there, but in particular the topic that he has spent most of his life studying, which is Russia. And just a fascinating conversation. And I hope you found it as interesting as I did. Just to bring you up to date, other things that we've covered today in our very first hour, we started out with a debate with one of the fellows who is doing the most to promote the idea that there are out-of-control gangs of black people who are running around trying to knock out white people. And Fox News is promoting this as the knockout game, and they're trying to turn it into a fad, apparently. Sort of the way going postal got turned into a fad, school shootings got turned into a fad, suicide goes viral, copycat killings, even serial killings. Fad is probably too weak a word for this. But my question to him is, why are you promoting this? And I never really got a good answer to that. In our second hour, I raised the question, is Rick Scott guilty of murder or merely manslaughter or killing? In the case here now of Charlene Dill, this 32-year-old mother of three who just died while she was making a sales call, selling vacuum cleaners door to door, making $11,000 a year, trying to pay for the cost of her kids. She had a heart disease. She had heart disease, and she could not get treatment for it because Rick Scott will not expand Medicaid. And in the state of Florida, you've got to make more than $11,400 a year to get Obamacare subsidies to get health insurance, free health insurance from Obamacare. And you've got to make less than $4,000 a year to qualify for Florida Medicaid. She made in between those two what we refer to as the Republican red state donut hole. And so, therefore, she could get no subsidies for health insurance, and she could not get Medicaid. So she would have had to buy full-price health insurance, which would have been, you know, given a pre-existing condition and everything else, would have been $10,000, $12,000 a year, and she only earned $11,000 a year. And with that, she had to raise three kids. So she died. She died Friday. Rick Scott killed a woman. And what are we going to do about that? So, Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. Yeah, I did enjoy the talk on Ukraine. But I have been wondering if this thing with Hobby Lobby, which was, I think you're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah, we had Shane on in the last hour. He was at the Supreme Court this morning, and he gave us a report on you know, how that went down. So back to you.
Well, I have been wondering if religion is actually a cover for this, because if these people keep saying they don't want birth control for women, their insurance companies, to allow this, are they allowing or approving their insurance companies to provide men with what's called a sexual performance enhancement drugs?
Viagra.
If they are paying for this, isn't this actually a form of sexual discrimination and not so much as a religious question?
Could be. My understanding of it is that insurance companies don't pay for Viagra or the other ones of that ilk unless there's some really serious medical condition that it treats. Just normal impotence or aging or whatever, that the health insurance companies don't pay for that. I could be wrong on that. I don't know personally.
I think you might be wrong, particularly
really?
Here in Alabama.
Okay. All right. Well, I know that the insurance companies will pay for the doctor visit where it gets prescribed for you. And that's what's at risk here. You know, whether they'll pay for the drug itself, I don't know. But you know, any insurance visit, any doctor's visit that a man has, the insurance companies will pay for. What they're arguing in Hobby Lobby is that if a woman goes to see her doctor and her doctor discusses with her, forget about writing prescriptions, discusses with her options with regard to birth control. In other words, the doctor simply says, you know, you could get an IUD, you could take hormonal birth control, you could just use condoms, or you could use the rhythm method. Those are, you know, some of your options. If the doctor simply says that, then the insurance company is forbidden from paying for that doctor visit.
Well, doesn't this breach patient confidentiality also?
I would think so. Shane, were either of these topics brought up in the oral arguments today? Because I thought that was the most egregious part of this whole thing. If you could put yourself on the air. I know you've got to push some buttons there in order to do it. But
I was not discussed at all. And actually, I didn't know that fact, quite
yeah.
honestly, Tom. That the doctor's visit itself, I thought this was just about supplying them. Those four types of birth control.
No. There's also, at least according to three stories I've read, including one of the New York Times.
I would trust that.
The second part of this is that doctor's visits that have to do with contraception are also not covered.
Did not come up once. No.
That's amazing. That should have come up. Norma, I think your point is a good one. Really what this is, you know, different rules for men and for women, which takes us back to the Republican war on women and under the cover of religion in this case. Although, you know, the religious in this world have been having their very own war on women for a long, long time. Norma, thank you for the call. Sean in Lansing, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine. Thank you.
Good. Tom, I just want to tell you, man, you are a wealth of information, man, and I swear I do not understand why you are not, you know, have a bigger footprint. I mean, this stuff's madness. I mean, this thing that's happening with Charlene Dillard, it brought a tear to my eye, man. This is insanity, man. Why aren't these people, and these are evil people, you know, you had the guy calling in talking about, well, all Republicans, well, if you, it says evil prevails when good men do nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's why I said to this guy, take back your heart.
Another,
I'm sorry?
I said, that's why I said to this guy, take back your party. Pardon my interrupting you, Sean. Go for it. Continue.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay. No, but I don't see, me and my fiance go back and forth about this, I despise Republicans. I despise what they believe in because there's nothing moral about anything they're doing. Because for example, you're talking about running the oil pipeline, for example, over an aquifer. Why? Okay, you don't want to provide people with health care that can't afford health care. Why? You don't want to feed the sick. You say you're religious, but you don't want to feed the sick and the poor. The Bible says you should do both. Why? And I don't understand why the Democrats are not drilling this home. Who is that you? Because you always said, what president is saying, I will stop telling the truth about you if you stop lying about me. Who said that?
I don't know that specific quote, but it sounds like the kind of thing Harry Truman would have said. Harry Truman said, I don't give Republicans hell. I just tell the truth and they think it's hell.
Right. Well, but I did get it from your show. I think it probably wasn't. I don't understand why Obama is not more forceful. The TPP, that's insanity.
Yeah.
That's taken away from us. Why are these Democrats not for?
Because the Supreme Court has said that money is protected by the First Amendment, so you cannot pass a law regulating money in the political sphere. And because of that, the people who have a lot of money, the billionaires, basically have come to own, by and large, both political parties. They explicitly, overtly, happily, enthusiastically, and publicly own the Republican Party, and others, plutocrats and oligarchs and billionaires own large chunks of the Democratic Party as well. Nobody, until the Supreme Court changes its makeup and reverses Citizens United, or until a constitutional amendment is passed that says that the First Amendment does not protect money and the 14th Amendment does not protect corporations, until one of those two things happens, then we're going to continue to have a political system that's not really a democratic republic. It's really an oligarchy. It's a government run by the very wealthy.
Doesn't that make it legalized bribery?
Yes, it does. We used to call this bribery. Now we call it Citizens United, Supreme Court sanctioned 501c4s, campaign PACs.
And what kind of heart do these people have, Tom? I mean, I all the things you always say, and I agree with you, they're sociopaths. I mean, these are supposed to be the best and the brightest. They come from these high-powered Ivy League schools, man, but they're doing stuff that's, like, twisted.
Yeah.
That's hurting people, not helping people.
There's some...
But thanks for all you do, Tom, and keep up the fight and show us what we need to do, because I'm going out here full force for the Democrats.
I'm with you, Sean. Thank you very much for the call and for your kind words. Here are my thoughts on this. Number one, there's some really, really good science in the field of psychology that shows that when people are born into great wealth or when they acquire great wealth, they begin to think of themselves as somehow different from, superior to, and independent of the rules of the rest of society, which is like, one step toward sociopathy, not born sociopath, kind of made sociopath. And then the second is that people who are actually born sociopaths, who don't actually feel the emotions of other people, those people tend to rise very quickly if they have the skill set. If they're born into an upper middle class family, they go to the right schools, and they're smart. If they have the skill set, they rise very quickly through the ranks of corporate America, particularly in the banking sectors and in the sectors that tend to involve life and death. The oil industry, the healthcare industry, the health insurance industry, these industries where, you have to be able to go to sleep at night knowing that you killed somebody today. It's sociopaths. I'm with you, Sean. You nailed it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So what do we do about it? We do the inside-outside game like Tim Carpenter talks about. You get inside the Democratic Party, run for precinct committee person, and on the outside you join activist groups. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, great show, Tom.
Thank you.
You're absolutely right about the Republican death panels denying people health care. I guess I would add, though, that it's not just people on Medicaid, because they're trying to repeal Obamacare and take us back to the way things were before, where more than 40,000 people a year were dying because the insurance companies were denying them health care, either because of pre-existing conditions, or a lot of people thought they had insurance, and when they got sick, the insurance company would kick them off their insurance. You know, and that's another form of a death panel. And I would also say to these Republicans, don't get mad at the messenger. Get mad at the people you voted for, you know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And show up at the polls. And you know, I would say to the you know, again, Bernard called and he said, you know, what do you have against Republicans, or where's that effect? Individual Republicans, there's some really good people of good heart and good faith in the Republican Party, and I wish they would take back their party from the crazies. Paul, thank you for the call. Jerry in Long Island, listening to WBAI. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I would like to talk on the situation in the Ukraine you're discussing with Professor Cohen, although I do want to say first briefly on Medicaid in Florida and elsewhere, it's important then to recognize what's flying off the radar screen for most people is the fact that in some states like Florida, it's already happened. Florida has almost been completely privatized, with Medicaid beneficiaries being turned over to private HMO companies. And what's happening in other states like New Hampshire and Arkansas is they're saying that we will only expand Medicaid if we can privatize it and give Medicaid money over to the private HMO companies instead of traditional Medicaid. So that's something that I think we have to watch out for and be careful of, that as Medicaid gets expanded, which is a good thing with respect to traditional Medicaid, we have to make sure that it's not privatized instead, that there's no political horse trade in which states like Arkansas and New Hampshire and other states around the country are being permitted to expand Medicaid only if they can privatize. So we have to go out against that and fight against that.
I'm with you.
With respect to the Ukraine, what you were discussing with Professor Cohn, at one point you were discussing something I like to pick up on and I like to expand on, and that's this whole issue of all the corporate special interests who have a dog in this fight, ranging from not only the World Bank is over at the IMF, but also, in addition, obviously, we have defense contractors such as Lockheed Martin. And together with the Pentagon, they want to try to justify the Pentagon's budget proposal plans to buy at least 100 anti-Russian F-35 fighter jets a year as veterans' benefits get cut, which has failed to be criticized enough by liberal Democrats. This dichotomy between cutting veterans' benefits and yet, even as the Pentagon budget generally gets cut, there's going to be increased expenditures for these anti-Russian F-35 fighter jets, and obviously Lockheed Martin wants to justify that purchase, and so is the Pentagon, and so the situation in Ukraine is mystically exploited by defense contractors like Lockheed Martin. And then we have the natural gas industry that you've mentioned, who has plans to do hydrofracking over in the Ukraine. So, and there's many other corporate special interests as well. So I think
Us back basically to the American oligarchs. It's not like it's the Russian oligarchs and the Ukrainian oligarchs we have to worry about. It's the American oligarchs. Jerry, excellent point. Thank you very much for the call. It's always nice to hear from you. We'll be back 10 minutes before the end. Tom Harbin here with you. Welcome back. And Thomas in New York City. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, Tom, listen. You're wonderful. You're a good guy. And what I wanted to know is that the only way we can beat those Republicans, because you are right, the Republicans and the Democrats are they both owned by the Republicans, and the only thing we can do is to get an independent party.
No, here's the problem. If you come up with an independent party, they're going to end up owned as soon as they have any kind of significant mojo. They will be owned by the plutocrats as well. What we've got to do is be able to pass laws that say we're going to regulate money in the political arena. And we did that with McCain-Feingold, and the Supreme Court struck it down in Citizens United. It's going to either take a change in the composition of the Supreme Court. If Justice Kennedy were to retire, for example, and be replaced by a good progressive, that would do it. And then they could revisit Citizens United. or it's going to take a constitutional amendment. And frankly, I think even if the Supreme Court's profile changes, they'll just tinker around the edges. I think it's going to take a clear, clean, unambiguous constitutional amendment, as movetoamend.org is proposing, that says corporations are not persons under the 14th Amendment and not afforded equal rights protections by the 14th Amendment. It was written to free the slaves, not the corporations. And corporations do not enjoy, and money does not enjoy First Amendment protection as if it was speech. It is not speech. It is property. And we just need to unambiguously say that. Thomas, thank you for the call. Brad in Conover, North Carolina. Hey, Brad, what's up? Hobby Lobby?
Yes, Hobby Lobby. I was just thinking, is it not kind of hypocritical of those owners of Hobby Lobby to I've never been in a Hobby Lobby store, but I bet they buy probably at least 90% of their products from China.
Right.
And does China not have forced abortion?
Yes, they do.
And you can and
Hobby Lobby does buy from China. Yes.
Well, is
and they used to provide health insurance that included birth control up until the time that the Beckett Fund, the Koch brothers funded Beckett Fund, approached them and said, "Why don't you drop that and let's sue the Obama, let's sue Obamacare." This is all about the politics, Brad. It's all about the politics.
It just seems so hypocritical to me to have employees in China making your goods.
Yep. Well, they're not employees; they're contractors. But I get your point is well said, well taken, and it's brilliant. It's an excellent point. Janet in Mount Vernon, Washington. Hey, Janet.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment about Ukraine and Stephen Professor Cohen's interview. That was very, very interesting. Last week on Charlie Rose's show, it was being hosted. It was on March the 20th, because while I was waiting, I looked it up. And I've never seen any place, anybody else talking about this, but Richard Haass, who's definitely Republican through and through. He was interviewing two people. One of them was from a right-wing kind of organization, I think. And the other one is a Columbia University professor, Kimberly Martin. And it's about a 12-minute segment. You can Google it. And I think it was called Situation in Crimea. And it's, Haass Graham Martin. And it's about 7 minutes in. And Kimberly Martin is the only person that I've heard say it. She said that she thought that really the whole thing was kind of a wag the dog on Putin's part, because there was a big scandal that was going to break over the Sochi Olympics. There was so much corruption there. It was just beyond. Mm-hmm. And that this is kind of a wag the dog that she says he's not the other general was saying, well, he's a chess player. She said he is not a chess player. He's like a judo master.
Hmm.
And this big scandal was about to break. And so what did he do? He went and made another,
But I haven't seen any big scandals break, have you?
No, that's what I mean. Nothing happened.
So this sounds like it might be a neocon line. No.
I don't know.
Because the neocons are really, really worked up about this. I mean, they are really worked up about this. They want to have a war with Russia so bad. It turns out this woman who resigned from RT very publicly had been orchestrated by a neoconservative group here in Washington, D.C. that tweeted out a half hour before she resigned that she was going to resign on air. Please go to RT and watch. I mean, it was all orchestrated. And this was a group that is the heir to the Project for a New American Century. The neocons are all over this, like white on rice. I mean, it's insane. So be wary of what you hear and check your sources. Janet, I got to move along. We're just about out of time. I want to get a couple more callers in here. Jay in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hey, Jay. Capitalism?
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good.
Make it on. Hey, you're a fan of Chris Hedges, right?
I am.
Yeah, he has a great new talk out, kind of comparing Melville, Moby Dick, to the impending collapse of capitalism.
Yeah, we've speared the whale and it's taking us down.
Yeah, it's great. I love listening to it.
Yeah, my only problem with Chris Hedges is that he was a war correspondent. He saw a lot of death, and I think he's been wounded by it. He goes to the really darkest places so quickly and doesn't doesn't offer a rope to pull you back up into the light. And I just can't always go there with him. I mean, he's been a guest on this program many times. I don't know him like a buddy, but, you know, we've met. I guess I'm an optimist, and I don't want to characterize Chris, but.
That's great. Hey, the only other thing I'd say, and this is kind of, I think this goes along the line with your book, Crash 2016, but it seems to me this Monopoly game, the rich have kind of got all the money.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that the game ends when somebody...
The game ends when everybody's screwed except one guy. One person ends up with all the money. That's how Monopoly ends. And that's how it's going to end now. Who's got it? The Koch brothers and the Walton. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the best of the rest of the news, all the news and information you won't hear from the corporate-owned news media. And should businesses have the right to inflict their religious beliefs on their employees, I'll challenge Andrew Abella, co-author of A Catechism for Business. Speaking of beliefs, do you believe in a resurrection? We'll talk with Tyler Johnson, founder of the Dead Raising Team. And don't forget, democracy requires you. Tag your it. Get out there and occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.